You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Bertie Brandis. She's calling me from London. Bertie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Bertie, let's talk about what you're working on now. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, so about 3 days ago, I had a big delivery of magazines because I've just wrapped the 10th issue of a magazine that I make called Mush Pit, which means we've been in this kind of really intense, like, two-month period. Even though it kind of spans all of the time, we, like, delve into it for about 2 months, making it, commissioning people, working with our art director, laying it out, printing it, and it's just arrived. So we had the launch on Tuesday night of this week. So that's kind of been at the forefront of my mind.
And so what's in this issue of Mosh Pit? Or maybe we should talk about how Mosh Pit started.
It's very reactionary. It started as a reaction against the women's media that we kind of felt not unrepresented by, because I think actually as like a young white woman, I am like very represented, if not overrepresented, in the media already. But I think there was a tone of voice that felt incredibly lacking. And I was working in journalism. I'm a writer, and I have been for, I guess, about 10 years. And just felt like there was nothing that kind of reflected actually the conversations that I was having with friends and the advice that I needed and the things that I was interested in. So Mosh Pit started as a zine in about 2011, and it's always been kind of very slapdash, very spontaneous. We lay it out ourselves with tools that we didn't really know how to use. So in that sense, it was kind of an updated cut and paste, but using digital programs. So we use InDesign. And we sort of just have grown it over the last 5 years. It's biannual, and now it's big. It's A4, full color, independent, still mad as ever.
That's wonderful. So the way it grew, was that through advertising or grants? How does a magazine like that grow and get to be as big as it is now?
No, so we've kind of always steered away from having advertising within the magazine. Initially, like, we just couldn't have advertising because it was so zine-y, and it was really just really small, and no one would have given us money. People would have probably given us money to not be in it. So that was never a problem. And then as we've kind of, I guess when I say grow, I just mean that as a creative project, it's developed. And we work with brands outside of the magazine. We always self-fund the magazine, but we'll do that from projects that we've done off the back of previous issues, consulting or, I don't know, partnering up. We've just...
So what does that mean exactly, partnering up or consulting? Is that design consulting, or what does that mean?
Yeah. Well, for example, this year we've done, I think, 4 big branded projects. We did a zine for Converse, which is basically like, you know, they gave us free rein to kind of create this A5 zine all about creative young London and the students within the kind of creative scenes, which was great. And we basically just got to kind of photograph a lot of our friends, and then we distributed them across like St. Martin's and the University of London Arts. So that's like one example of how we work with brands.
And when you just say you distribute them, you're distributing them physically. These are magazines that are being dropped off, not electronically distributed.
No, it's all print, everything that we've done with them. And then we did another one where we curated an exhibition of female artists. at a Covent Garden gallery space with a brand called Melissa, which is, it's really fascinating actually, working on projects like that.
So working on projects in particular with a brand, Melissa, should we talk about that a little bit? Was that unusual?
I think it's just you wouldn't expect necessarily to get freedom, and the whole point that we've made Mushfit and kind of my whole ethos in everything that I've always written and done was being able to have like absolute creative freedom, and actually like working with this set of restrictions can be just as rewarding in a way, because you have to meet other challenges and you have to, I find it really interesting. Our new art director, Richard Turley, he works at Wiseman Kennedy, and I think he kind of feels the same. It's like having parameters in place can actually make projects way more interesting in a way, a bit less exhausting as well.
But the parameters you're given obviously aren't parameters on content itself, or are they?
Well, in a sense they are, because no brand's ever going to want you to create kind of explicit work. When I say explicit, I just mean kind of, Mushfit's incredibly like candid and honest. And silly. We had a feature in a previous issue called Who's Muff, where it's just pictures of faces and pictures of muffs, and you had to match one to the other, and like, you know, Converse is never going to pay you to put that in a zine with their name on it. So
right. It's
about kind of like finding a voice, that they respond to, which is also honest, but it's not quite as honest, I suppose, or not quite as happy to overshare.
And so let's talk a little bit about the, you know, the initial impulse of the magazine and its continuing mission, which is to give voice to women in a way that there wasn't before. What do you see? I'd like to just talk about that issue because, of course, you know, across the world we're hearing, you know, much more about, I don't know if it could be called a new wave of feminism, but certainly a new wave of awareness about sexual assault and so many things concerning women. What do you see happening with the magazine, or what did you see really lacking in terms of the voice of women that wasn't represented that your magazine is representing? I'm trying to get at that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, well, from my perspective, because I was working I had a column in Vice, and obviously, you know, Vice is not like was not then, I guess it was like 2011, 2010, it wasn't like massively establishment, but I was kind of starting to understand the world of establishment journalism, writing for newspapers and kind of meeting the women who worked at those magazines, those like really incredibly prestigious magazines, and generally just sensing that they had very little interest in the kind of the things that I wanted to discuss. I mean, as a 27-year-old woman, I still go on Yahoo Answers. Genuinely, I'll ask them, like, why am I still so sad after a breakup? And, like, I find that kind of insane that there isn't a place or a magazine or a... And there are some really great ones, but I wanted to really create something that felt relatable and familiar and non-patronizing and just above all really, really honest and kind of funny. And hopefully that is what Mushfit is. It's an ever-changing thing which changes as we grow up. But yeah, that's its goal.
And do you think the reason that hasn't happened before, that surprisingly there isn't anything like that out there, or certainly not many things, is because publishing is a male dominated industry, or is it something else?
I think yes, to an extent. I also think, well, definitely in the UK, it's like a wealth thing. Like the majority of people who write for Vogue or Elle or whatever always seem to be kind of coming from a very similar, I don't know if you'll get these references, but like a Notting Hill background, which is kind of very wealthy and kind of, I don't know how to explain it in a way that everyone will understand.
No, that's clear. Of course, I don't understand exactly the reference of Notting Hill, but the equivalent of that here would be talked about as a privileged class or something, upbringing.
Yeah.
People with a certain amount of money that are going to see the world in a different way.
Totally, yeah. And like this kind of real reluctance to step outside of that. I just remember being made to feel really kind of silly for wanting to voice these feelings that I had, or like these questions that I had, and to do so in a way which wasn't like I was going to the doctor. You know, we wanted to reflect that big sister feeling that you have a conversation with your best friend about something in a way that was kind of also quite creative and visual. So that's why we made it, and that's why we're still making it.
And how has it gone so far? I mean, what has the reception been to this? Does it seem like you're filling a niche that people are very excited to contribute to? How has it grown?
Yeah,
and how does that feel?
Well, this issue in particular is a really, really special one, because we worked really closely with this incredible, I don't want to say designer, because he's way more than a designer, but he's called Richard Turley, and he basically he's changed it in a way that's made it more itself, which just being able to say is an amazing thing. And what he did was he really stripped it back to the kind of initial sense or feeling that we had, which normally we would kind of try to manifest visually through fake adverts or photo shoots or whatever, and he stripped it right back to the thoughts and the words, and then created these like beautiful pages using those words. So, and then it's been really exciting working with him. So this issue's been received really, really well. You should speak to him. He's fascinating.
I'd love to speak with him. So concerning perhaps him or the staff, is the staff of the magazine, it's obviously not all women. There are men on the staff as well?
No, so it's basically me and another woman, Charlotte Roberts, and we do everything. So we do all the commissioning, we sort all the printing, we do all of the work. Like, we're essentially like a creative agency, I suppose. And then he works closely with us. So when I say it's like super independent and it feels like a conversation between two people, like, it really, really is. There's no kind of bureaucracy at all, which again gives us so much freedom, because the only people that we have to answer to are ourselves, which is great.
That is great. That's a rare and wonderful thing.
It's so rare. It's so refreshing. I love it.
And when you talk about commissioning, you're commissioning other writers. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, we commission artists, a lot of photographers, some writers, but not really that many. I feel like I like to do all the writing. Actually, we have Darcy Wilder. I don't know if you've ever spoken with her. She is an incredible, she's a New York-based writer, and she's a friend of Richard's, and she wrote an absolutely heartbreaking personal essay in the new issue. So we can be incredibly specific with what we put in. Also, we don't have a structure, so we've broken the magazine up with this sort of like 12-page visual panic attack in the middle of it, which is I love. Hopefully other people.
What does that mean? I love the sound of that, a 12-page panic attack. What does that mean?
It's what I was saying Richard did before, but he has this real knack of kind of really getting down to the core of what you want to say, and then without diluting it, kind of creating a visual identity for it. I don't know, I've written a lot. I used to have two columns for Vice, and I've been writing for Vice and IDs basically my whole working life, and I'm so used to that, you know, you have a kernel of an idea and then you flesh it out and you develop on it and you write a piece and you do the intro and you interview people and that's really satisfying in its own way, but there's this really unique sense of satisfaction that comes from simply the kernel, that core idea, becoming like the visual manifestation of that. So Richard worked with like some text I'd literally written like after I'd had a panic attack, and then he created this kind of like sort of jarring but also kind of really soothing series of pages where the writing is like echoed across it, and sometimes you kind of can't see it, or it'll be hidden behind another feature, and then it'll come back and it'll recur, and it feels so much different. It feels so different to other features in magazines, which are about things. It feels like it is the thing, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And that's very exciting, and it sounds like a fantastic new issue as well. In the context we're in now, right, we certainly talk about in the United States a lot this phrase, this meme, the future is women, the future is female. In this kind of environment, does Mosh Pit seem to be playing a kind of more central role? I mean, do you see it's been around for a while, and it's only in the last year or so that there's been all this talk? I mean, at least in the United States, partly because of, you know, the president we should have had, and also because of sexual assault and so many things coming out now, which seems to be such a huge wake-up call, at least for men, but also the kind of demonstration against, you know, the current president, which was global, right? It was, as far as I know, the biggest demonstration in history. How have these kind of elements, if they have, affected the magazine, or is it that the magazine is so personal that it doesn't kind of reflect that context?
No, I think it absolutely has, but I think we're really careful not to kind of. I think a real pet peeve of mine is when people call, you know, these men who have been accused of sexual assault, they call them monstrous, whereas I know the reality of it, it's just so banal because it happens so often that when you demonize something, you're kind of saying that it's not common. I think with Mosh Pit, the angle that we constantly take is one of like, we're on the side of the women who knew that this was happening, because from our perspective, like, all women knew that this was happening. We've just been waiting for it to be discussed in the mainstream, and now it has been. And I think, and so one of the like repeated motifs through this issue is just three words: I'm so tired. And it says that it will kind of creep out at you, or be like, I don't know, really opaque on one page, and then it will be like in the corner of another one. And it's just like emphasizing this idea of like waiting and like taking strength from knowing that a lot of women have just been waiting for this moment to happen, and it's kind of finally happening. I don't know. I think it's just been an inevitable.
It's very interesting which you say. It's true that the men are demonized, making it seem like they are the exception to the rule, as opposed to the rule, which is still not discussed. Like for the art world, you know, it's just beginning to happen in the United States. Yeah. You know, just about, I don't know, four people have been you know, talked about in the art world, and it's and that I imagine is just the beginning. The world of rock and roll, we haven't heard anything about yet.
Exactly. I think it's about kind of it's not being surprised. I think it's more about kind of taking satisfaction in the knowledge that this is happening now, and this will snowball. And, you know, we're very targeted towards female readers, of course. And it's kind of, you know, pledging this solidarity with them, that we know that they've been waiting for it for so long, and so have we. And I think this whole issue, actually, it was very inspired by, weirdly, by this Botticelli painting of Fortitude. And this idea that there's strength in waiting, and there's strength in kind of not resisting, because she's not actively kind of fighting back, but she's just kind of like withstanding and being resilient. That was a huge inspiration for the issue early on, and I think kind of relevant to that whole discussion.
It sounds like it's a notion of a kind of stoic resistance that is, as you said, it has been there in a sense all along, because women knew these things were happening. So that painting, that's very interesting. So that painting itself, you see the image of the woman in the painting as someone who is, am I using that word incorrectly, resistance, or is it not really resistance?
I think it's
kind of endurance.
Yeah, I think it's resilience and endurance. And I think also that specific painting is so important because it's within a series of seven. Botticelli only painted fortitude, but it's part of the seven virtues. And so alongside it, there's also justice. And so justice is a kind of more aggressive way of like finding balance, and fortitude almost comes before that. And this issue is kind of exactly, it's like we've been waiting so long for this, and this kind of symbolizes that resilience. And then what comes next is taking justice, I suppose. Sounds a bit aggressive.
Well, I like that. I don't think justice sounds aggressive. I mean, you said resilience, and I was saying resistance also. And maybe resistance sounds aggressive, you know. But that march, that global march, I think it was really more about, you know, women's voices as opposed to just Trump. But it was the beginning of that, and I see that as resistance, and see the art and writing as resistance, which maybe that does sound too aggressive. I see it as a pushback, you know.
I'm all for that. I just don't necessarily. I don't know. I think much of it as an object is probably an object of resistance and retaliation, but specifically issue 10, I think, is not so much about that. I think it's just that idea of feeling exhausted by all of it. I mean, it's been such an exhausting couple of years.
Absolutely. And how, I mean, two more questions before we go. How can people read your magazine if they're in the States or in other parts of the world than London or the UK? Is there a way to access the magazine?
Yeah, we have, we do technically have global distribution, but it's going to be in like more kind of galleries and art bookshops. So it's not the easiest thing to find if you're not in the UK, but it's definitely in New York, definitely LA, definitely San Francisco. There will be a list of stockists available online. We don't put anything online. You can't buy a PDF just because the humor doesn't really translate. We've tried it before and it just doesn't really work, but we'll send them anywhere in the world. So people can just email us.
In the future of the magazine, this is a very exciting issue, and there's, you know, design changes, and obviously as it's grown, it's just getting more articulate and more powerful. How do you see the future of the magazine now? Is this a particularly exciting time for you? I mean, with the notion of, if I'm not overplaying that, you know, the future is female, that kind of thing, you know, we're seeing at least in the States, television that's very unusual, that's you know, creating, you know, and showing roles for women that we've never seen on television before, so, and then that's part of all the independent networks like here, Netflix and others, which you have a similar system. So is how do you see the future of the magazine in the context of what looks like tremendous momentum?
Well, I think because we are ad-free and we're self-funded, the most important thing to me is that the magazine continues to be kind of provocative and controversial. And if it ever stops being that, if everybody likes it, I think we'll be doing something wrong. So hopefully it will continue to annoy and upset people, particularly men. And present a kind of unexpected voice and an unexpected, possibly unwelcome depiction, like honest depiction of what it's like to be a woman, a very personal kind of funny and confessional representation of that. And then, yeah, if it gets too successful, we'll just stop and do something else.
I like that. That was well said. And before we go, I want to ask you the question I ask everyone, which is, what is it that you're reading at the moment? It could be off topic or anything at all.
Yes, so I have been reading a lot of Maggie Nelson, who is this poet, this brilliant, brilliant poet. And she also has written, she wrote a famous book called The Argonauts. And she also wrote a book called Bluettes, which is brilliant. But she specifically has a collection of poetry called Something Bright Then Holds, which I adore and come back to all the time. And then also Jeanette Winterson, The World and Other Places, who's another one of my all-time favorite writers.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you the best with this issue as well as the forthcoming issues.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.